Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Taking a lazy day hike across the great state of Arizona this morning at my house, Rosie on the House. Come on in. Join us on the hike. Hiking through Montezuma Castle, Montezuma's Well, and Tuzegut National Monument with Park Ranger Laura Varen Burkhart. Laura, we were just talking about you're at the Montezuma Castle.
Mm-hmm.
You also spend some time at the well.
Correct.
Okay. Now, y'all have a great museum visitor center at the castle.
Right.
You have really just a contact booth at the well.
Right. Yeah. It's when you arrive and park in the parking lot, you'll see basically a little hut, and it's where our rangers and volunteers can get into the air conditioning for a little while
yeah.
and eat their lunch. But you can, if you can't find a ranger in the contact station, then you'll find them on the trail. That is a fun park to work at because the rangers and the volunteers get to be on the trail as long as they want to,
yes.
which is why we all decide to do a job
join
like
the
this.
National Park.
Right, right.
Not to be in the office.
Correct, yeah. yeah.
So the well, it's a sinkhole. And so I remember y'all sent divers down there, and I thought, now this is going to be good. They're going to find like old wagon wheel axles, burrow bones, you know, miners' axes. I mean, it was fairly pristine down there is what I remember the findings were.
Right. Yeah, we didn't really find anything like that down there, which I guess is kind of surprising. At least as far as I know, we didn't find anything like that down there. The water in that sinkhole is just so unique. So the bottom, and this is where it could be a surprise, but the bottom is really a false bottom. It's this cloud of suspended fine silt, and it looks like sand at the bottom of it. But if you were to, and I've seen from the videos, if you were to just put your hand down in the bottom, it would just sink through this cloud of silt. So could there be stuff below that? Maybe.
How deep is it to that artificial bottom?
It's 45 feet,
okay.
I think. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then beyond that, we're actually not sure how deep the cracks in the rocks go. The aquifer is below it. That's where all the spring water comes out of. But we're not quite sure how deep that those cracks go down. So it's still a mystery. We can't visibly see the bottom, and any sort of instrument, like a sounding equipment that we were to drop down there, that weight, the pressure from the water pushes those weights back up. So we can't drop anything down there. And then the cloud of silt is so fine that any sort of waves that we want, like sonar, radar, if we want to put it down there, it just, that silt reflects it back up. So we can't really map the bottom of the well. So it still kind of puzzles hydrologists and geologists.
Well, what do the archaeologists say was the relationship between the castle and the well? They certainly didn't need the well for fresh water supply with Beaver Creek right there. What is there a relationship, or is it just a consequence and we just connected them because we could?
They have a relationship because even though Montezuma Well, the main feature, is a geological formation, there are archaeological sites there of the Sanawa. There's small cave dwellings, small cliff dwellings, and a couple of hilltop pueblos similar to Tuzegut. So kind of all, there's also a pit house on display that's as you enter the park, and that's an earlier version of housing from that time period. So you get to see all the different versions of houses plus this geological formation. And all of that water, so all the water that pumps into the well, it's 1.5 million gallons a day that pumps into the well and consequently leaks out of the well. It leaks through the side of the mound and is caught in a prehistoric irrigation system. And that water is channeled to a field. And that field, we believe, was a giant agricultural field for this culture. And it's evident they wouldn't have spent all that work and time maintaining a irrigation canal if it wasn't used for something important like food.
Well, that's a very significant connection. And you were talking about the pit houses and the little cliff dwellings and stuff. I think If people could walk through the Verde Valley with a trained eye, they'd be amazed at the number of dwelling sites that exist. And I mean, that goes all the way down to almost to like Black Canyon City, all the way up New River, Awafria, Verde Valley. I mean, there were thousands of people that inhabited this area.
Yeah, and something that something I think is really interesting. So something that we all need to survive, obviously, is water. So the waterways were kind of the highways that connected these villages together. If you're along a creek or a river in the Verde Valley, you're going to find some sort of pre-Columbian site at least every 2 miles, whether it's a 1 or 2 room fort or a 100-room pueblo. And they're just dotted all over the valley. And another thing is if you were to overlay a trade route map from this time period, overlay it with our interstates and highways that are in Arizona today, it is the same exact routes. I-40, I-17, I-10, Highway 60, it's the same exact routes that they were traveling 800, 900 years ago.
It is by foot.
By foot, yeah, by foot.
It is absolutely amazing. Okay, we've covered the well, we've covered the castle. We haven't got up the road down to Cornville, back road over to Toosie Goot. Both structures are built with stone and mortar, okay? That's a heck of a hod carrier's job to get mortar up to the top of the castle. But now the castle, built in the recess of a limestone sheer cliff, so you have the anchor points and you have the thermal mass, you have so many advantages. And then like just, I don't know, what is it, 15 miles down the road at Toosie Goot, they built on top of a little knoll. Two very opposite, same culture, same construction type.
Right. Yeah. It's they're about, I think it's 23 miles apart.
Okay.
But yeah, it's the same valley, and they had very similar resources. But their choices, we believe, were dictated by the topography of the land. When you're at Montezuma Castle, Beaver Creek, that runs right by the park, did a really great job of carving these sheer cliffs and luckily some south-facing cliffs. And that we believe that was a good advantage because in the winter, the sun is shining on that structure all day. And then I'm sure as you know, as living in Phoenix, at night, your house does not automatically cool down. That heat radiates off your walls. And so I know for me, sometimes the hottest part of the day in my house is like 7 o'clock at night, right after the sun goes down. And then Toosie Goot, they had the Verde River, which is the largest river that runs through that valley. So they wanted to be near it. The hill takes them out of the flood zone. And there are several pueblos on the west side of the valley that are up on top of hilltops like that. And that advantage of not being in a cliffside but being on top of a hill is you have what we call a line of sight living. So you can have a visual communication network with your neighbors because everybody lives next to the fresh water source but up on a hill above the tree line. So you can actually visually communicate. It could have been something like smoke signals. It could have been something shiny like volcanic glass. Could have been something like they were really great at weaving cotton and making fabrics. So it could have been something like that they were visually communicating with each other.
And in all the studying I've done of the pre-Columbian culture in Arizona, of all the assimilated tribes throughout the state of Arizona, something happened about 1400.
Right, yeah.
And it was virtually statewide.
Yeah, you see that in the Southwest, that era, that there was a huge shift, that people moved around quite a bit. There's a few things that we go off of to explain that time period, and one of these theories could be true, or they could all be true, because we all move for various reasons, but the first thing that we look at is the climate evidence during that time period. We see a drought that came into that era during the time period. So if you're a agricultural community, that's an issue.
That's critical.
Yeah. We also see evidence of other cultures coming into the Verde Valley about 100 years before the Sanawa left. And so now you've got overpopulation plus resource depletion. But we also consult our affiliated tribes, the cultures that have descended from the people that lived at Montezuma Castle in Tuzigoot. And some of them say that was never really meant to be a permanent place for them anyway, that it was just a stopover point on their great migration to where they were eventually supposed to live today. And so even though it was a 400-year stopover point, it was still only supposed to be temporary. So.
Well, what we've got to in the last couple minutes of the program here is you've got to invite people up and tell them some of the events you've got going on.
Right. So one of the events that I want to let people know about, especially in Tucson, is there's going to be an Arizona National Parks Festival. And it's Sunday, October 28th. From 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Reed Park in central Tucson. And all 22 Arizona National Park units will be there represented. We'll each have a booth with information and activities.
That would be a great day trip.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
We're really excited. All the rangers are personally excited because we all email each other, but we never really get to see each other very much. So that's going to be great. And there'll be music and cultural demonstrations and activities for kids and a couple of food trucks. So if you get hungry, you can have a snack.
Oh, Reed's a great park, too.
Reed Park's a great park. Reed Park, Sunday.
Sunday, October 28th.
Mark that on your calendars, y'all. Laura, any last little invite you'd like to get out to the state of Arizona?
Yeah, so keep an eye out on our websites because we're going to be adding for November, it's Native American Heritage Month. And on Saturdays and Sundays for each weekend for November, we're going to have special guests and events going on every Saturday and Sunday with our tribal partners. They're going to be cultural demonstrators, artists, musicians, storytellers, jewelry makers, kachina carvers. And we do it every year, and it's such a great event. And people always end up having some really great conversations with our demonstrators and learning quite a bit about the people that have been in the Southwest for thousands of years.
Fantastic. Laura Varen Burkhart, park ranger at Montezuma Castle, Montezuma Well, and Tuzigoot. Look for her. When you see her out on the trails, tell her you heard her on her first ever radio debut. You did a great job.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
All right. So when y'all see her out on the trail, let her know you heard her first right here at Rosie on the House.